This is David Marlett. We're doing another episode of Cinemersia for Creative Disturbance. And I am joined by Dr. Oliver Krylos from the University of UC Davis. And we're going to be talking a little bit about, what's going on in VR, especially with regard to the potential in filmmaking. But first, Oliver, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, well, hi, David. My pleasure. Glad to be on. Glad to help out.
Yeah. Well, tell me, let me start off by just asking you a little bit about what you guys are doing at UC Davis and what you're specifically focused on there.
Right. We are primarily focusing on almost three independent areas, really. And the main area, the main thing that we are doing and that we are kind of famous for, I guess, is using virtual reality, not as a research interest in itself, but using it as a tool to do science, which is something that's surprisingly rarely done, even though it is an optimal fit. So essentially what happens is that a lot of stuff that's going on in the natural sciences, in the physical sciences, you know, geology, physics, engineering, what have you, involves very complex three-dimensional data. And it is really hard for the scientist to make sense of those data. Using normal, looking at spreadsheets is totally out. Of course, people have been doing visualization for a long time on 2D desktop systems, and that works okay. But again, you're looking at a 2D projection of 3D data. Right. And so if you just go one dimension up and essentially use VR, or VR is a kind of bad term. It has so many meanings to so many different people.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I call them holographic displays because it kind of has a connotation. It's physically, technically incorrect, but connotationally right, that you can now look at these 3D data really as three-dimensional things, and suddenly they make a lot more sense. So we have a lot of scientists who collect data, create data, bring that in, and then use VR methods to analyze their data and really get insights out of that, which then feed into the next step of what they're doing, meaning statistic analysis. And then in the end, the only number that might have come out of VR is some, you know, annual creep rate of the San Andreas fault, which goes into a paper, let's say. But the whole the number has been created by poring over tons and tons of data in a VR environment. And so what we're concretely doing is we are building these VR environments, we're developing the software to bring in the data, look at them, we're developing the user interaction techniques to do that. And then just, you know, run the system and let the scientists go wild with it, pretty much.
And are you seeing, you know, just in the last several months, like with the HoloLens that came out or was announced, what changes have you seen in distance? I mean, you and I last talked, I guess, you know, in this world, ancient history ago, meaning 6 months ago, In the last, what interests you in the last 2 or 3 months, or has there been anything particular that you're seeing, that you're watching?
Oh, well, the thing is that we have been doing this VR thing for a very, very long time.
Right.
We built the cave 10 years ago. I've been doing it for almost 20 years now. And there hasn't really been much movement in the first 18 of those 20 years, just because very few people were working on it. And so since 2 years ago, suddenly a lot of interest is there, a lot of things are happening, and primarily a lot of new hardware is being developed and coming out. There's fairly little movement on the software side, on the user interaction side, because that, you know, people are not at the point where they're thinking about it. Right now it's about how to get my Oculus to work, how to get my Control VR to work. And so I am having a very keen eye on the kind of hardware development that comes up, which is also unfortunately, well, maybe not unfortunately, what I'm spending a lot of my time on is to evaluate those things that come up, and then if they become physical, developing drivers for it that it can work. Actually, the camera we're using right now that I used to talk to you is an Intel RealSense camera, which is not on the market yet. It just came out like a couple of days ago, which is another 3D scanning camera for natural interaction, and I'm working with that right now.
Well, it does make you look a whole lot better than what you do in person, so that's good for you on that.
Yes, it's definitely a pretty fine camera. There's a lot of stuff going on right now in terms of input devices. So many people are jumping on that. In terms of output, all the Google Glass, cell phone, VR things. Now the big players jumping in, Microsoft HoloLens, which is yet another modality of doing what we're doing pretty much. It's just another display.
It sounded like that, especially with regard to data visualization. Have you had a chance to mess with that yet, or are you taking
it? No, I'm going to see it in May. They invited me to come down there and check it out. And I'm looking forward to it.
I bet you are.
It's totally overhyped. Don't quote me on that. Well, you just did. But you know, there's definitely a kernel of truth to it. And
well,
in a way, it's just a different modality of doing exactly what we're doing. So I think it's going to drop into our software without any problems. And it's, if it works as well as they say, then it's going to work. And it's going to work for our purposes really well.
Right.
And Sony just came out with something that got a bit ridiculed just the other day.
I saw that.
So there's
right.
I mentioned we are doing three things, and visualization is the first, and keeping track and keeping up with evolving VR hardware is the second.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm doing is I'm not only developing VR application software to visualize data and do other things, but also a VR operating system, so to speak, which is the foundation that makes our software work on pretty much every VR display input device that I've ever gotten my hands on. And so what I'm doing is I'm just, you know, supporting more and more devices in that system as I'm getting my hands on them.
I noticed the other, I guess yesterday, I got an email from another, actually it was the first one. I assume I'll be getting more from a VR company that wants to use, you know, for just video dissemination, I mean, distribution, for saying, listen, use our software, ours will play your video and your 360 video and any. And I assume that, you know, obviously there's a race towards some standardization out there in that, and there's going to need to be. You're talking about getting your Oculus to work. I mean, just trying to get some of these different videos to work that have been shot. I've been going through that process too.
But yeah,
I imagine,
exactly.
But you guys have your own, you're developing your own or already have developed your own software mainly for data visualization. Is that what?
Well, that's the main application. It's right. Generally applicable. You can do pretty much really anything from it, anything with it, from games to playing video, doing essentially 3D teleconferencing.
Right.
It's just a matter of developing the application, and we have focused on the application side on scientific visualization just because our bread and butter.
Right.
But then the third thing that we are doing is essentially looking into humanities applications, theater, mixed reality theater, mixed reality performance. We have not looked into making movies. That's sort of out of our purview at this point. But we've done some pretty freaky stuff with dancers and motion capture and 3D transmission and collaboration and so forth. Of course, I want to talk about film and video, I must admit right here that that is not my expertise. I can only speak as an informed and interested layperson.
Well, it all crosses over each other. I mean, I'm interested in that particular niche, but my goodness, everything. It's hard to find something that say, well, that has nothing to do. No, it all interrelates right now down to these details. In fact, right now what we're working on is, you know, very heavily just in the basic gaming in the 360 space. I mean, and the applications there. It just happens to be we're putting a video into it, but
yeah,
a lot of that basic technology is, you know, questions basically that are already being answered in the gaming side of things.
Right.
But
right.
Now, so what are you seeing as? So you mentioned before we started visiting, you had mentioned something about a new VR lab that you guys are building, and that's or have I missed that? I think you say you are building or have built there.
We are building right now.
I
went to the hardware store yesterday to buy some brackets and bolts, so it's in the process. That one is going to be in the humanities. That's going to be part of our third application area. And it's sort of an experimental place. It's to figure out what we can do with it. It's going to be based on commodity technology, unlike our main current VR system, the Cave. It is definitely not commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be based on cheap projectors, cheap optical tracking, cheap head-mounted devices, cheap input devices. But I think the experience is going to be pretty top-notch. Again, we're not done yet.
Right.
And it's going to be, I do not know what it's going to be used for at this point. We have a game development group who want to really start working with it. They made this funky game called Play the Knave, where you can reenact with a friend scenes from Shakespeare. And you're captured in 3D with a Kinect, and your emotions are mapped onto an avatar in period clothing. And you can act out things from, I think they're going with Midsummer Night's Dream. And so, you know, that also will work in this 3D environment. So those are the kind of things that they're doing. And the others are, like I mentioned, motion capture, bringing dancers in, doing remote collaborative dance and so forth. So it's going to be developing as we have it, really. It's really more of a play space than a particular than a particular use case environment. And for me, right. it's an opportunity to just experiment with all these modalities, different right. devices, different ways of using them that I normally can't, because our other system is used as a scientific instrument. So I can't just go in there and tear it down and say, hey, I'm going to play for the next 2 weeks. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
That'll hold up pretty severe. We have when we're down for a week, it gets really bad. So
yeah.
it holds up scientific research pretty severely. Can't do that.
Can't do that. Well, you know, the 3D image capture, and this is another one of those maybe crossover places, because I know you had mentioned that you guys are you're interested in that and the focus on the image capture side of things, which is, of course, you know, for like the project I'm working on, we originally were going to go 3D and finally just decided it was just too much of a at cinema quality 3D, which was sort of yeah. an underlying thing I wanted to do. It became too much of a headache for this first film.
Yeah.
And that we were going to kind of punt and go with 2D and do what optical tricks we can to add to the effect.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying now this camera that you mentioned is maybe I think it was before we started talking here. Is something that you guys are developing, or it's an off-the-shelf technology that you're integrating into?
It's off-the-shelf. Okay. We're using a variety of different 3D cameras. And when I say 3D camera, I must be very clear. I do not mean stereoscopic camera. When I say 3D camera, I mean essentially, you know, like the Kinect or laser scanner, which creates 3D geometry of the objects you put in front of them.
You did
the
say
big
that.
Difference,
okay.
of course, being that with a stereo camera, you get a 3D view from the point of view of the camera.
Right.
But with this one, you can view your recorded things from any point of view. It's a free viewpoint camera.
Okay.
It has its own little problems. It has actually plenty of problems. But it allows us to fundamentally look at the captured things from any point of view that we want. So you can use a virtual camera to look at the right. scene that you captured using real cameras. And, of course, for VR, where you can't control the position and orientation from where the user is looking, that makes a lot of things a lot easier. In that it's a no-brainer to just look at your captured object 90 degrees from the side, as opposed to, you know, with a stereoscopic camera, you simply couldn't do that.
Right.
We're using commodity stuff. We're using a bunch of Kinect version 1s. I have a couple of Kinect version 2s. I got this new Intel camera. Mm-hmm. We are trying, you know, all different things to just see how far they get us. It is definitely not cinema quality, let me tell you that. But for our purposes, it's just about right.
But it's early experimentation. I mean, oftentimes I get into these conversations about cinema, and of course people immediately start thinking that they're going to be able to move through the space.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, imagine the terabytes per millisecond.
Well, if you're talking cinema quality.
But if you can capture what you're like in the sense that you're talking, and then photorealistically paint onto those captured 360 images, right?
Yep.
Then we might be able to start approaching somewhat of that effect. Am I thinking the right path?
Yeah. That's exactly the reason why we're doing it. The 3D capture, being lo-fi as it is, allows us to have the viewer freely move through the captured scene.
Right.
And it's not terabytes per second because it's really low quality. It's megabytes per second.
Right.
But that's the fundamental idea, yeah. It enables a very different way of doing immersive storytelling in a way. And again, I'm a layperson on that. So, you know, it's almost like a video game where you have real people in a real space, but you can freely walk through. You
right.
can walk up to someone and high-five them, basically, and then you go away and look at something else without that causing technical problems. It's just a matter of currently fairly low video quality.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, this whole journey, it's, I assume you're like me, and it's a fun place to, you know, vantage point, not only to be watching from, but also, hopefully getting out there and doing some things from,
yeah.
and I know you are, it's an exciting place. Well, listen,
yeah.
I really appreciate you taking the time to visit
welcome.
With me today, and, you know, I know you and I will be staying in touch, and hopefully we can do this again as you move forward with your work.
Yeah, well, one thing that we didn't have a chance to get into that I'm really curious about, because what you are doing is in a way diametrically opposite to what we are doing, and that we have these 3D cameras, you know, scanning
right.
inward and
right.
creating a full 3D geometry of the scene we are capturing, whereas
right.
you have the 360 camera scanning outward, scanning a full sphere or hemisphere of the environment. But then you said you were going to 2D, so you don't necessarily have depth in it, but you might want to have it in the end, of course.
For this first film, we're just doing it this way to for some experimentation. We've got a lot of other places where we're using the space, but optically we're going to go with 2D.
Yeah, and what very much interests me about this from a very technical point of view is just the difficulty of creating not just stereo with a 360 camera, which is hard, as you know, but then also, you know, how do you deal with people moving around through the space and so forth? So there are some, I'm keeping a sort of, again, interested but layperson eye on that, what people are doing in that space, and I'm definitely interested in finding out more about that. Because it's just so opposite to what we're doing, but it's, of course, where a lot of people are going to go, I think. It's where a lot of things are going to happen.
Well, it's a fun area to be in, and I'm glad, you know, and it's nice to have you as a colleague. Then we can continue to share some of these thoughts on this, because obviously, you know, like we talked about, it, all this kind of crosses over what you're doing and what we're doing here, and you know, it's all experimentation to a large extent, and that's fun. That's fun to be doing. Well, listen, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I look forward to us, like I say, continuing this, and maybe we'll record another one of these soon as we continue on our paths.
Yeah, once there are some news, hopefully soon.
Okay. Well, very
good.
All
right,
good.
David.
Thank you, Oliver. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Have a good one. Bye bye.